This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And I wonder sometimes if people know how many audio programs you can get on archive. That's a really fun thing to do. If you want an archived PressWatch program, then go to that search bar, which is the little airplane. A little biplane is carrying a tag, and it says search, and, well, it has a little search symbol. And, of course, you can put in PressWatch, all lowercase, PressWatch, and it'll give you a list of audio going back weeks and weeks and weeks, and that can be pretty handy. We need to change the fact that KBOO is still kind of an in secret around here. It's kind of cool in a way, but, you know, KBOO can't afford to be, we can't afford to be a secret anymore. And so I suggest that we maybe do things like lawn signs. I want you to contact me through kboo.fm and figure out how to do that. And tell me if you are interested in maybe putting up some lawn signs and just letting this area know that there is this fantastic community radio station. Not only that we're still here, but that we're here in the first place, because lots of people just never heard of KBOO Portland. You can really help with that. And then maybe we can get some funds rolling in here. I know that we can one way or another. Another thing I've been thinking about is Radio Bingo. I'm not going to tell you more about that. I'm just going to let you think about that. We have a gaming license. We can do that. We could do Radio Bingo. Contact me about that. KBOO.fm. Going to PressWatch proper, then, U.S. Air Force General Mark Welsh claimed on Tuesday that a staggering number of non-consensual sexual assaults in the U.S. military were somehow the fault of consensual sex, which he called the hookup mentality. Here's the quote. Ready? Some of it is the hookup mentality of junior high even, and high school students now, which my children can tell you about from watching their friends and being frustrated by it, end quote. General Welsh, speaking at a Senate hearing on sexual assault in the military. 26,000 assaults reports in the U.S. military way up because women are thinking, well, maybe somebody somewhere will believe me. Maybe somebody will do something about it. So there's more reporting than there was. And the U.S. Air Force Chief of Sexual Assault Prevention, Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Krasinski, was arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting a woman in an Arlington, Texas military base parking lot. Now, you may have heard this news, especially if you're listening to Democracy Now!, but I brought it up again so I can say, guys, as a former guy, I got something to say about this. And this is, it swirls around in the lower echelons of guy culture now, doesn't it? And when I say lower echelons, I don't mean economically lower class. I mean, when you get together and you kind of want to, you know, talk on the down low about what's really real, that's where you can stop rape culture. And I want each one of you listening to me, each one of you guys, to say to yourself, okay, I'm never going to make an excuse for that. Again, no matter what's happened in the past, not going to say she brought it on. And you're not going to objectify women anymore. What's objectification? That's when somebody is getting out of the car and you say, excellent. No, let women be something other than their bodies for a while. That doesn't mean that men and women and women and women and men and men can't enjoy themselves. That just means no objectification. Okay, is it a deal? KBOO Portland, the Dalai Lama is in town today, the former God King of Tibet. Hello, Dalai. So nice to have you back in town again. A new review of hundreds of scientific studies surrounding glyphosate, the major component of Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, sheds light on its effects within the human body. The paper describes how all of these effects would work together and with other variables trigger health problems in humans, including debilitating diseases like gastrointestinal disorders, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's disease. Did you get that? That's Monsanto bringing you gastrointestinal disorders, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's disease. But they get great profits, at least. I know we're all really happy about that. Glyphosate impairs a cytochrome P450, a CYP gene pathway, no, I don't know what that means either, which creates enzymes, it says here, that help to form and also break down molecules in cells. They are myriad important CYP enzymes, including aromatase, the enzyme that converts estrogen into androgen, and 21-hydroxylase, which creates cortisol, the stress hormone, and aldosterone, which regulates blood pressure. So you mess all those things up when you use Roundup or when someone else uses Roundup and you get it in your food. Following on the previous show, this just in, police are people. Just people. Stop worshiping them. You listening, Fox News? Police are people. The U.S. is beginning military exercise in the Persian Gulf. This is a quote from Central Command, U.S. This is not a journalistic report, but this is actually what Central Command says on their website. Participating nations began staging and staff integration May 6th for the afloat phase of the exercise to begin next week. 35 ships, 18 unmanned underwater vehicles, and more than 100 explosive ordnance disposal drivers will deploy as participants during the exercise events in the Persian Gulf. It's hosted by NAVCENT 5th Fleet and will be conducted in three phases. A three-day symposium on maritime infrastructure protection, an afloat operations phase, and a reintegration phase where participants discuss best practices and lessons learned for future exercises. Now, that sounds pretty benign, except you realize that it involves 40 nations. It's really huge. It comes at a time where Syria might be attacked, and they're going to be out there actively looking for mines, which would be Iran's response if it were attacked. Returning to the text, similar to last year, participants will exercise the afloat staging base concept aboard the USS Ponce and the RFA Cardigan Bay, and will cover surface mine countermeasures, mine hunting, and airborne mine countermeasures operations, international explosive ordnance disposal training, diving operations, small boat exercises. What does Iran have? Small boats. Unmanned aerial vehicle operations, unmanned underwater vehicle operations, and port clearance operations. They're just going to be busy as hell. New to this year's exercises, they will introduce shipping escort and visit, board search and seizure operations, which will include representatives from maritime shipping industry who are involved in exercise planning and will play a significant role in shipping escort events. Industry representatives, by which they mean the oil industry, will also lead an oil spill response tabletop discussion during the exercise. So all that's going on in the Persian Gulf. Press Watch News, you're not supposed to know. Time is 9:11. You're listening to KBOO Portland, KBOO Community Radio. Imperialism did not arise in the United States in the last decade, nor in the last 100 years. It was first demonstrated in the actions and the attitudes of the European colonists arriving on these shores, starting with one Cristofo Colombo, known loftily as Columbus, who bragged that the indigenous people here were unfamiliar and unprepared for war. He wasn't. He was in Hispaniola when he said this. And he said that a ship full or two of Europeans could dominate them all. His method of domination, his favorite, was to cut off the noses and hands of anyone who did not bring him gold. He left them bleeding and dying. He tried to bring back slaves, but they died in the voyage of ill treatment and European filth. This set the attitude for what became U.S. imperialism, though it could be argued that the burning times, the destruction of women in Europe just wrapping up in Columbus era, also gave the soon-to-be U.S. a good grounding in bloody oppression, but that wasn't enough. The attempted genocide of the indigenous on this continent left a few hundred years of coldness and cruelty to the American psyche. And then, of course, one must add the ongoing oppression and slavery of black Africans. All in all, it's not surprising the U.S. can consistently come up with some lie or excuse to invade nations regularly. Looking back over history, it's obvious that only the countervailing power of more or less sovereign nations has prevented a truly truly unipolar world to this point. Though the Russians resist and the Chinese compete, the U.S. is still trying to conquer the globe and has a good start with it at more than 700 bases worldwide. The cost of this insanity is staggering. Trillions of dollars that cannot be paid by you and me, by U.S. workers, though we are taxed sorely for it. The Pentagon is a power unto itself. It is not controlled by the U.S. population. It is not controlled by Congress. Rather, the opposite. It can gather our sons and daughters at will, control their minds, hurl them against the freedom fighters of the world, And, you know, because anyone who fights against foreign domination is a freedom fighter, right? Can we agree on that? Isn't that true? I mean, wouldn't we be freedom fighters if someone invaded here and we shot back? It's in this context, on a global topsoil generated by centuries of groaning, dying humans, that the U.S. turns its drooling fangs and piercing, all-seeing eyes towards now Syria, now Iran, now North Korea, tasty and frustrating holdouts against the rule of the billionaire heirs and profiteers. Does it matter what excuse is provided to bomb them, invade them, blockade and starve them, poison them with depleted uranium, hold back medicines for their illnesses, crush them? Let's look back at a few centuries of excuses. Let's have a look at these excuses and see how good they were. Let's see now. Women, it was okay to crush women. Because, as the Puritans knew, women were the noonday devil, temptresses against the chastity of the righteous of the church, and were to be brought low, their bodies tortured and burned, and their property stolen to please God. The indigenous peoples, the original people of this continent, they were haughty and godless, it was said. Certainly Cotton Mather said this. And therefore, they could be slaughtered with cannon. The African people also had the wrong gods. And besides, as the Pope said regarding clothing in equatorial heat, they wore skimpy or little clothing, were promiscuous, and thus could be slaughtered and enslaved by properly righteous people. In 1846, the U.S. actually claimed that the Mexicans had invaded U.S. territory. They hadn't, and so Mexico was invaded and largely annexed. In 1898, the people and land stolen by the Spanish were stolen by the Americans, claiming a ship had been sunk. And that was enough to enslave Cuba and the Philippine Islands. Then there was the Central and South Americas, to be brought directly under the control of the fruit and mining barons because, well, there were a number of ridiculous excuses. My favorite was that the entirety of Central and South America are America's backyard, in the parlance of those who are so comfortable with official propaganda that America means only the U.S. and not the larger landmass of North and South America that is not in the lower 48 states. Skip to the Reagan administration, which invaded tiny Grenada on the basis of an entirely fictional Soviet airbase. Anyone ever find that Soviet airbase? George Bush administration invaded Panama, George Bush the elder, on the excuse that it shifted white powder drugs. Never mind that the U.S. was far more efficient at doing that shifting, as was revealed in Alfred W. McCoy's book, The Politics of Heroin, and of course the CIA cocaine expose by the now assassinated journalist Gary Webb, an amazing man, who, according to the U.S. corporate press, could shoot himself in the head, even after he had shot himself in the head. Shall we now remember the Taliban, who ruled Afghanistan after a U.S.-supported routing of Soviet-aligned governments? Does anyone remember that the U.S. offered them, at pre-9/11, a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs? Does anyone remember that General Colin Powell's weapons of mass destruction were weapons of mass distraction and didn't exist at all, that those wars are ongoing despite the ignorance and denial of U.S. corporate press and its mind-controlled consumers? Because there's a new excuse. The excuse, which is exactly as valid as the other excuses I've mentioned here, carries just as much weight, is that Syria has used chemical weapons. The bastards! Those who support war on Syria, and you can find fulminations of those sorts in the New York Times right now, following the tradition of lies and slaughter, have no doubt that bombing Syria will be followed sooner or later by attacks on nearby countries by the U.S. and its special ally, Israel. People will die. Some of our sons and daughters will die or have their minds and bodies ravaged by horror and violence. And the super rich will get more billions and trillions, which they will hide offshore to keep it from being taxed. The corporate press will show detonations of the bombs in Syria live on television if they can. Remember Baghdad? I won't see it. I'll be in the streets. Will you? Here's a quote from Karl Marx. Stop up your ears now. Men make their own history, but they do not make it as they please. They do not make it under circumstances chosen by themselves, but under circumstances directly encountered, given, and transmitted from the past. The tradition of all the dead generations weighs like a nightmare on the brain of the living. So, speaking of socialists, I have an article from the World Socialist website. U.S. shrugs off Syrian opposition's chemical weapons use, presses for war, by Thomas Geist. And I invite your calls now, your comments on war with Syria, related topics, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And this article mentions in it somewhere a test that up till recently, I think you can still find on YouTube, of chemical weapons by the Syrian opposition. U.S. officials, he writes, continued to press for war against Syria Tuesday, dismissing United Nations investigator Carla De Ponte's statement that Western-backed opposition forces, not the Syrian regime of President Bashar al-Assad, have used chemical weapons. De Ponte's comment, based on an investigation, including extensive interviews by UN officials, tore to shreds the lie with which Washington has tried to justify its drive to war, namely that it is attacking Syria to protect the people from Assad's use of chemical weapons. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney summarily rejected Del Ponte's report without offering a shred of evidence to refute her statement. "We are highly skeptical," she said, "of any suggestions that the opposition used chemical weapons. We find it highly likely that any chemical weapon use that has taken place in Syria was done by the Assad regime, and that remains our position," end quote. There's every reason to believe, in fact, that the opposition has used chemical weapons, and as it has apparently received training on such weapons from the U.S. or allied forces. According to a CNN report in December, the U.S. has dispatched contractors and mercenaries for the purpose of training the rebels to secure stockpiles and handle chemical weapons sites and materials. Opposition forces have received numerous shipments of weapons and equipment overseen by the United States and allied regimes such as Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. Last December, opposition fighters posted a video on YouTube showing them testing chemical weapons and declaring their readiness to use them. That video famously showed some bunnies in a presumably airtight cage. You get to watch the bunnies, and then they're gassed with some sort of cholinesterase disruptor, some sort of nerve gas, and they die horribly because that's a horrible way to go. Lots of convulsions and pain involved. Taking their lead from Carney, U.S. lawmakers issued calls for a full-scale attack on Syria. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Jay is on the phone.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
Our federal system was designed to marginalize the ruling class. It was a decentralized agrarian system which placed control of the economy in the hands of the people through the people's authority to tax and regulate the economy at the local level. When progressives gave the central government the authority to tax the people directly and to set up a central bank, it turned the central government into an oligarchy. And basically, that is what gave the central government the power to create the military-industrial complex. And they have literally enslaved all of us to this military-industrial complex and the entire world.
The founding pirates and slave owners did have some good ideas, I quite agree. And, you've revealed one aspect of it, certainly.
Well, I'm trying to keep things simple, because if we do not unite around federalism, they will do to us what they did to India. In other words, the oligarchy that owns us is the monster that Gandhi was fighting.
All right. Well, that was the British, and I see the analogy.
The Bank of England, the Rothschild octopus.
Well, and that brings me to wealth distribution, and the banks are the method. Are one of the methods that keep us poor, even though we are the people who produce the wealth of the United States. We are the workers.
Well, see, the federal system was designed to distribute the power, economic power, amongst the people, not wealth itself. It was designed to give everybody an equal amount of economic power.
Well, I have this to say about that. The bicameral legislature was intended to give much greater power to landowners, and that certainly has lasted to this day and has led to many of the abuses of which you speak. I think that, you know, the founding fathers were quite wealthy and intended to retain it. So, but I think things are much worse. And I know that I press a button when I say redistribute the wealth, because everyone knows we're supposed to hate socialism in every aspect of it. But that's why I keep pressing the button. I think there were some good ideas there.
What the redistribute the wealth is, the trick there is that the ruling class, you need a decider to decide what equal wealth is, which equals totalitarian rule.
No, it doesn't.
It does. You
no,
have
that's,
to
that's
have
just
a decider.
An axiom. No, that's just that's what you're programmed to say. Now, when I say redistribute the wealth, what I mean is we are already distributing our wealth. We make the wealth, and then we distribute it to billionaires. That's crazy. There shouldn't be any billionaires. There should be millionaires. There should be many, many, many millionaires, and we should be happy for them. And if we distributed the wealth that way, if we had a minimum of poverty and a maximum of wealth, this would be a much more sane society. People wouldn't be able to just call the shots at the national level, whether we like it or not, which is what is happening right now with the billionaires.
I agree 100%. See, I'm a Ron Paul libertarian, and you're a leftist, and we can agree.
There you go. There's more we agree with than disagree with, I'm sure. Well, thanks very much for your call. Mm-hmm. Number to call 503-231-8187. Time is 9:24. If you want to call, we've got a couple minutes. Talking about war with Syria, returning to the article by Thomas Gaist and World Socialist website, the Assad regime, according to Mr. Menendez, that would be the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Robert Menendez. Assad regime has crossed a red line that forces us to consider all options. I'm pleased that he didn't say the table. I get so tired of that damn table. You know, all options on the table. Anyway, Menendez said that in a written statement, treating as a fact the completely unsubstantiated claim refuted by Del Ponte that the Syrian regime has used chemical weapons against the opposition. Reed is on the line. Number to call 503-231-8187. Hi, Reed. Did I get that name right? Oh, Marie. Marie is on the line.
Yes, Therese, is that you?
Hi, yes.
This is the first time I've called on your program, and I love your program, and I love all the work you've done on Fukushima, and I have a comment about Syria.
All right.
Okay, I believe that what's going on with Syria is actually partly a distraction for all of us Americans about Guantanamo. And I believe that with these poor, poor men that are starving in Guantanamo, I believe a simple thing that we could do is we could fast from sugar. And I called it in on the Bread and Roses program last Friday, and I believe a lot of us do not have the health ability to fast. But if we could be giving up sugar, that would be in solidarity with these poor men. Also, a lot of us Americans don't need sugar anyway. It's also in solidarity with Haiti. And then one more thing about Syria, okay?
Yes.
I believe that when we had the 2008-2009 crisis, the financial crisis, there was a lot of talk then about war with Korea, which I believe, again, was just a distraction to have people not focus on what's happening with Wall Street. So, again, I think the government's trying to pull the wool over our eyes, and we need to not forget these poor, poor men in Guantanamo.
Thank you for that comment. You know, in the 1930s, if you look at newspaper accounts in 1933, and you look at the comments on the economy, they always say that prosperity is just around the corner, and that's a perfect way to translate what we hear all the time right now. Oh, the numbers are up. The recovery is on. And then we find out little details, like only 7% of the U.S. population has actually improved their lot since the 08 breakdown. And the other 93% of us, well, we know what's going on. I don't need to tell you. You know, if you're out of a job, man, you are out of a job. You know how hard it is. We're doubling up and tripling up in our houses. Our cars are getting older. That's an interesting statistic. Our cars, the average car is now 11, I think, years old. And, you know, if you look back into the 70s, cars were 7 years old. And one more call, and I'll lean on the engineer to find that name again. Mac is on the air.
Please hang up.
Oh, well, Mac, I'm not quite ready to hang up, but we're almost there. Coming up, Linda Olson Osterlund, so stay tuned to KBOO Portland. Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania, asserted the existence of a broad consensus in favor of the U.S. and its allies creating a safe zone inside Syria. You know what a safe zone is? That's a place where they bomb the crap out of it, and there's planes flying over it constantly, and you're living in absolute terror, and it's completely safe for billionaires over here. This would involve a large-scale airstrike against Syrian air defenses and the carving out of a significant portion of the Syrian territory under the control of the imperialist powers. And as I was saying before, they'll probably put it on television. If they possibly can, you can sadistically watch those bombs go off. You won't quite be able to hear the screams, but maybe you can do that yourself as the TV set goes on, or the computer. You can just make little screams and imagine the smell of the blood if you're into that. You've been listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned for more of the incredible Radio Zine on KBOO Portland.
Tune into Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look here on KBOO. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is the Yemeni victims of U.S. drone attacks. My guest is Ibrahim Khatabi from Yemen. Originally, Ibrahim is I've said that all wrong. I'm reading my own sentence, too. My guest is Ibrahim Khatabi. He's originally from Yemen, and he's a legal worker for the Center for Constitutional Rights, or the CCR, since 2008, where he works on their Guantanamo Global Justice Initiative. Before the CCR, he worked with Human Rights Watch in New York on their terrorism, counterterrorism section. He's well-traveled throughout the Middle East, speaks Arabic, and is an expert on Yemen. Thank you for joining me, Ibrahim.
Thanks for having me, Linda.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you again here on KBOO. On April 23rd, the U.S. Senate held its first ever public hearing on our government's secret drone program more than a decade after it had begun, and with up to, what many sources say, is up to 4,000 civilian deaths attributed to it. The hearing was before the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Human Rights, and it's chaired by Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. Ibrahim, tell us about this hearing. What led up to it? Who was there, and how important was it?
Well, the hearing, as you know, there was some Yemeni young person from, actually Yemeni activist and a journalist from the ground. His name is Fahd al-Musaylimi. And for the first time, with regards to the drones war, he was able to bring accounts from Yemen, from his own village. Before he was traveling to the U.S., His village actually was hit by a drone, and the whole community was terrified by the drone attacks.
We'll have a little clip of his testimony later too, to hear his voice and hear him speak about that. When they say a village is hit by a drone attack, it's more than I learned recently. I've interviewed a couple good journalists and Jeremy Scahill yesterday, and when a drone attack goes, it's not just one drone. It's often multiple missiles from that drone, other air drones surveilling it, other air vehicles that have gone over in the area. Sometimes they send down helicopters to take DNA samples of the people that they've killed. It's more than just, you know, even just a drone is horrible enough, but it's much more, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the drone is just only the attack. What it causes is terrifying people, killing civilians, damaging houses, terrifying the kids and the moms that are actually going about their businesses or going to schools. And not only that, what it does too, it's suspending the entire judicial system. And now you have one person or the executive branch going and killing people right and left, terrifying citizens, violating the sovereign of a nation that it's not in war with the U.S. And so we need some sort of accountability and oversight. We need to know exactly how they targeted these individuals, who was on that list, and why, and whether they were able to capture them or not. In my opinion, when a drone was able to spot someone who is wanted, for example, that means they can arrest that person. They know the location of that person, and there are many accounts of in Yemen that when the attacks took place, these individuals was there, and they could have been captured. And so we don't know. There is no sort of accountability or transparency. And not only that, we need to get due process. We need to bring people to trials if we think they cause them harms or they, planning to attack, whether Yemeni or U.S. citizens or facilities or anything.
Well, Ibrahim, let's talk about this hearing before we get into this, more of the specifics of the testimony. This is the first ever hearing in Congress about the drone. Can you talk about what led up to this hearing and the preparation that you did the CCR, and that name the other organizations that were there and the preparation they did for this hearing?
There's a number of organizations on the ground in Yemen that did a field search and they did a research all over the country, and they found that many of the individuals were civilians. Many of the individuals that got killed were civilians, including many women, many children, folks that had nothing to do with anything, and they still asking why Americans are killing us. I think everyone that gone to the sites got the questions from family members. We don't know what's going on. Why are we being killed by the U.S.?
So one of the organizations was a Swiss-based organization called Al-Karama. Can you tell us about that organization? And they had people that went on the ground. And then the other one was HUD, which is the National Organization for Defending Rights and Freedoms, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, non-governmental human rights organization in Yemen. So did both of those organizations go to specific sites where there had been drone attacks to gain the testimony?
Yes, they actually met with individuals, with family of victims, went all over the country, and not only in one site. So the drones is not only in one particular state